Okay, let me first of
David,
all,
you can't, David, you
let me
cannot
just
do
first
that.
of all deal with the link that you are making between what happened in Iceland and what happens here. I do not know of any policymakers who were jailed in Iceland. As I understand it, it was bankers who were jailed in Iceland. Okay? Jailed for their roles in the 2008 financial crisis. I don't know of any ministers of government or anybody at that level who was jailed in Iceland for the crisis.
You are absolutely right. The facts of life are is that the people who contributed to people losing money were the people in the bank.
So I don't know that we are on all fours in that regard.
David, who facilitated it?
No, you have a strong... But having facilitated it, not one of them has been jailed in Iceland.
And why not?
Well, you got to go and ask the Icelandic people about that.
I can't
give you the answer to that. But I want to deal with the other point which you have raised. And yes, everybody knows this is painful. The woman who spoke to me this morning, she articulated the plight of many people very well, and especially people who, they are not at the bottom of the spectrum, you know. These were people who had major investments, who did what the society said you should have done, which is
David, you want to know something?
Work long, work hard, and put your money in a situation where you don't end up being a ward of the states. Okay?
Thank you.
Now, having done that, everything, though, is tied to the macro picture. All these promises that we get and all these assurances can only be kept if the macro picture is kept a certain way. Now, from your background, because you have a background in accounts, you're an accountant, and I want you to tell us what you saw as the alternatives to the policy which has been pursued by the Mia Motley administration in circumstances where the government says that the alternative to this was to let the foreign reserves run out and find ourselves in a situation where we might have been staring a devaluation in the face.
David, I go before that point. I go to the point, and that is where my previous comment comes to. It's the ministerial decisions, the lack of transparency, and those are the issues that have created the issue for the Mia Motley administration. Now,
what was the option for the Mia Motley administration? Because you criticized her administration
What you want to do is you want to look at what happened in the previous 8 years, and that is what my point is. I do not vote for any particular party. I vote for transparency, and what I see is guys like Sinclair, guys like Stewart, guys like Innes, and the others who were the senior ministers, they were not responsible in responding to the increasing criticisms of the debt aspect of Barbados. David, you've heard that enough over the last 15 years.
Definitely, I have heard it. Immaturity, whatever. You can call it what you will. But the reality is this is where we are right now. It is what it is, and we have to deal with it.
The bankers in Iceland went to jail because of negligence and not looking after their backside. The people. Yeah,
a lot of bankers elsewhere went nowhere. Okay?
Well, now.
Thank you. We got to go.
We
got to go. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Let me share something with you that I believe might bring a chuckle to you. This is from you. This one says here, this person wrote a letter to the Prime Minister, care of the Barbados Labour Party at Roebuck Street, and copied the media. And he first of all congratulated the Prime Minister on winning at the polls in May and cautioned her that she has a big job ahead of her. He says that soon after you took office, we were presented with a wide range of higher taxes. We accepted these without much opposition. If these were implemented before the elections, you would have had us marching up and down Bay Street. The electorate are giving you time to turn the country around. But the writer goes on to say that many Bajans are disappointed on the recent tender notices that have been appearing in the press relating to providing meals for the House of Assembly and Senate for members and friends. I think this is in very poor taste when we will have to cut back on our lifestyle and are asked to feed over 150 people every week. There are many people who work in offices and outdoors who can only afford a small portion of rice or pie and no meat or vegetables from their cook shop or Suzuki van. These same people, some of whom may soon be laid off, are being asked to feed those with a much higher salary and whose job is guaranteed for 5 years. Here's his punchline. I suggest that the members of Parliament and the Senate eat lunch in the new minibus stand, Cheapside Market, Chiffette, Old City Bar, Musters, etc. This will keep them in touch with the people. This is something that elected officials of all parties soon lose. There's also a provision that alcoholic drinks will be provided by another source. This also sends the wrong signals, drinking on the job. Do not provide meals, but instead enhance the school meals or help one of the charity organizations who feed the homeless and destitute. This will go a long way to slowing the growing opposition to the necessary austerity measures. So, he's recommending that the MP should eat in the minibus stand out there by Cheapside Market, Chiffette, the Old City Bar, Musters, etc. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Ellis. Morning.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm well, and you?
Not well.
Okay.
I want, listening to the minister today, I ended up with a million questions, but of course we can't deal with that on air. So I want to deal with something specific to the offer letter, and then some things dealing with the debt restructuring itself, a question for, relative to that. Now, on the offer letter itself, I haven't gone down to the central bank myself, but three close people to me have gone. And they ask the question down there every time, each one of them. What if we want to object to this and say no? Because the letter itself on page 4 tells you, if we say no and you get the 50%, we will all be swept into it anyhow. That is it on page 4 of
that's
the
correct.
Offer.
That's correct.
Right. Now, if you go down to page 6, they were told at that time, if you do that, then we will hold everything for you in escrow and you may not get back your money. This was told to three different people on three different occasions.
Yes, that question was posed at a news conference that we attended, and the answer to it is that the government would have effectively defaulted on its debt to those people, and there could be no guarantee as to if and when they would be able to get back their money.
But on the other hand, they're saying that they're going to sweep up all the people anyhow into the new instruments. Whether they send in, what happens to people if they're not in the island? They're to be swept in, on the one hand. And on the second hand, we're not giving you back your money. There's a contradiction right there. Because I can tell you, for myself personally, I had full intention of standing and objecting to the offer letter, well knowing that I'm going to lose the battle. Right? It's a done deal. There's no ifs, buts, or maybes about that. But I wanted to state my objections clearly and emphatically. If I'm to be told now that if I object, I'm to be put in a basket, basically, and left there, and they will deal with all the rest first and not you, is that a democracy? Anyway, that is my only question as it relates to that. It has me exceedingly annoyed, exceedingly beyond belief, Mr. Ellis. So I can't even go further on that right now, because I would say things are not polite. The second thing is to do with the debt restructuring itself. And it's the question I want to ask. If you would permit me to ask the Brastak family a little silly question first that will lead into it. You permit me?
It depends upon what the question is. I can.
Nothing mean. It's very simple. If I go into this, if I have a size 8 shoe, and I walk into a store to buy a pair of shoes, and all I can see on the box is 32. Is there something wrong with my foot? No. There has been a different measurement. My foot is the same size, a 32 will fit a size 8 foot. Just a different method of measuring. And this comes to the question now about debt restructuring. And here is the question. At the end of 2017, if our gross public sector debt was 96.2% of GDP, rather than 148% of GDP, would the government still be making this very harsh move on debt restructuring? And the reason I ask that question, Mr. Ellis, is because from eons up to the first quarter 2018, we have measured the government's debt in a consolidated fashion. All right? Where private sector, public sector debt was basically gross central government debt minus the NIS, minus the central bank, minus all other SOEs in a consolidated fashion. The reason for that is it's double entry accounting. When one holds an asset on one hand and a liability on the other hand, especially within an internal group, which is government, domestic public sector, one wipes out the other. That has not been done. Right now, the reason we have 140 at the end of 2017, it goes up, is because you're not presenting it to us in a consolidated fashion anymore. You're presenting it like if these are individual private institutions. They're not. They are not. The NIS is a statutory body.
So if they consolidated all, where would it take our debt?
I'm going to leave you at the end of 2017. If I go on to that, we go up to June, the middle of this year, you see? And if we go to June, the middle of this year, what GDP are you measuring by last year's? The one you're expecting? It can't be certainly the one up to June.
You know, this is a question which you need to put before the public, and it is this. Mm-hmm. What's the best case scenario? What's the worst case scenario in terms of the debt?
This is your worst case scenario.
Because some people are saying it's 140%, 170%, 175%.
End of December last year, they were claiming it was 148%. But if you look at the central bank governor's report for the first quarter of this year, looking back to what they said was the debt for 2017, the first quarter report, it would have showed you 96.2% as the debt. That was presented in a consolidated fashion. If you look at notes four, from that report to the report to the end of June, you will see a change in the way the debt was measured. And all of a sudden, right, the debt at the end of the year was 148%, not 96 anymore.
Because you say that it's a change of measurement?
Yeah.
Or is it the consolidation of all the debt?
No, if it was consolidation of all the debt, it would be 96%.
But somebody from the Ministry of Finance needs to answer you on that.
That's what I'm saying. No, the consolidation of all the debt is the gross central government debt. What I'm referring to here is the gross public sector debt, the entire thing, the government and all of its arms.
When explained to us at the news conference, I attribute it to Professor Avinash Prasad, who said that it was 175% when all of the debt was taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we recall.
He said 175% of GDP up to June.
Yes.
I think I heard that too. But measured by
correct.
What level of GDP?
Well,
Nobody asked him that, you know.
Well,
GDP for when? End of 2017? The projected for the end of 2018? Or for July?
So your argument is that if you go back to the end of last year, then at 96.2%, mm-hmm. there would be no justification for a restructuring of debt. That's what you're arguing?
Not this method of it, no. I would say that.
Hold on. Not this one. What other options would we have?
But Mr. Ellis, I'm not going to go off on brass tacks on that. I have written on what I think about that.
Okay.
I am not going to go off on it because it can get a little bit heady.
Okay, fair enough.
Right. But there's not brass tacks. Probably is not the place for it.
Mm. What I would like you to do, though, you are a pretty well informed contributor to this program, and I want to say to you that yours is a voice that ought to be heard, if and when representatives of the government make themselves available to further explain this matter. So if you would be so kind, I'd like you to leave your contact details with Dennis Johnson so that we may make contact with you if and when that becomes necessary, okay?
Certainly.
Because at the end of the day, our mission here is to get the information to the public, explore all of the ramifications, put people in a position to hear what are the answers available? Because I know there's a lot of concern out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of concern.
Okay.
There's concern.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I will do that. Thank you, Mr. Ellis.
Good. Down to brass tacks. Good morning. Hello. Now 6 minutes after 11 o'clock. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I'm on the same, am I?
Yes, you are.
Good. Mr. Ellis, my concern is in all this, the government is asking all of us to tighten our belts. But at the same time, I still see quite a lot of wastage in the public sector. It comes in many forms. For instance, last time we were into a road program, the roads were badly fixed. For one thing, if you do not, you have a road with a foundation problem, and you simply run some asphalt over it. You put it down at any old temperature. You don't put it down at the temperature that it will stay down. You don't put down a top coat. And you don't fix the foundation. That is wastage. In a few weeks or a few months, it will come up again. So my concern is that government is going to look at this road problem very carefully before they start to waste money again. The other thing, of course, is we have to find some way of stopping the utility companies from immediately after the road is fixed, coming and digging it back up again. That would mean, for example, laying new pipes probably for the waterworks or whatever method they use. But these are things that have to be done if you don't want to have the wastage and then ask the public again to tighten their belts to accommodate that wastage. Another area that I have not heard any government address, and is one that the public is very concerned about. As we look around every day, we see these big four-wheel drive vehicles being driven by messengers and all types of things. And, you know, on weekends, you see them being taken to church, and you see some of the family members driving them. That is wastage. And I would like to think that someone in government would take a serious look at that, reduce the size of those vehicles, look and see what needs to be done on a weekly or monthly basis, and see if they can reduce the usage of gasoline, as the public is being asked to do. Because many people who normally would have put in, say, $100 in gas in their car, are now finding that the $100 does not go that far, so they are reducing the usage of it. These are all cost-cutting measures, and I think a government that is serious should not be afraid to tell the people who are creating this abuse and wastage, look, we are in a crisis. We have to cut back, and this is what we're going to do, and we deserve policy on these matters. So that is something that I hope the minister would listen to, because I know his interest right now is to try to get some foreign exchange in here, to cut down on the debt by cutting back on the interest that is being paid out. But whilst you're doing that, the wastage is something that has to be attacked, and attacked right away.
Okay, well, you've articulated your concern about waste. On the issue of vehicles, I do believe that Barbadians need to wake up, and to a large extent we are focusing on one thing, but there's another aspect of it that is particularly dangerous, and there needs to be a lot more education on it. There was a policy in this country to encourage people to use diesel vehicles. Now, diesel vehicles are now well established as being responsible for some serious health hazards. And while we are talking a lot about the public service vehicles and trying to get people from one place to the next, we are completely oblivious to the dangers inherent in that. Now, issues of pollution, which other people are facing in many countries, Lima, Peru, parts of India, China, even London, are pretty low on the totem pole here in Barbados. But the time is now for us to address these issues. And we must begin, because it's a holistic problem. You can't solve it just by dealing with one aspect of it. But I identify diesel emissions, and the government itself needs to set the example by reviewing the number of diesel-powered vehicles that it has in its fleet, and to move as quickly as possible to address this particular matter. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you this morning?
I'm well, and you?
Fair to find. Mr. Ellis, what about the CLECO people? We heard anything about their money?
They remain frustrated by the fact that they can't get the money.
Well, you know, so these, the people with the bond should understand that, you know, they're not the only one.
There are people with bonds and CLECO investments as well. There are people who were hard hit, who got major payouts and decided that they were going to divvy up their payouts between government paper and CLECO, and now they find that they're in no man's land.
But listen to me, it's not the BLP fault, you know. Everyone should understand that they come in and find mess that they never realized that was there. And if the people just hold on a bit, you know, and things will work out. Trust me, it will work out, that they will wonder why they were worrying. Because right now, you don't tell me you put every cent in a bond. And what were you living on all the time? You understand?
It depends upon how much money you put in. If you put in enough money, you could find yourself with the half-yearly interest, being able to look after major things in your life. If you had health issues, it supplements your pension. Let's accept this.
Okay.
These issues did not begin with the current administration. Let's accept that. But we got some tough choices to make. And in the process, people are going to be hurt. And those people need to be heard as they express how they feel about the pain that they have to endure.
But then again, it's nothing to do with, you know, you come.
We agree on that. But since we agree on that, what? Say nothing?
What's going to happen? You cannot. Do you want Barbados to devalue? Hell no. No one would want a devaluation. If they want that, then go ahead. And they will see how sorry they will be. The people in CLECO, people put half a million, millions, and don't get back a cent. And they're living, they're open. Don't tell me you're going to buy bond when people was telling you it's a risky business. Do not buy it because things can work out bad. Look at it at the moment. Do you think Ms. Monthly, Mia Monthly, Prime Minister Monthly and her cabinet would want people to suffer? No way. No way. And we all got to put it. I buy petrol once. My car is used every day. And I put $50 in petrol. Every week I don't complain. Even if I got to put $100 and I've got to do it. I've got to do it. Put the car down and take the bus for a while. Learn what it is like to take a bus. You know, look, I don't understand why. Do you believe if the government is going and find things okay, they would put people through this. There is no way. So all the letters you're reading and all the what the lady before you put on, there's nothing to compare with what they went in and signed. And I think the government should come out. Do not have, just come out and talk to the people on the TV. Don't have no one there with you. Just the prime minister and the economist sit down and explain. Use every channel to tell the people how bad it is. It is really bad. Right now, look at the rainfall we have. And look how people suffer with the rain, the well block up. No well has been cleared for 10 years. No well has been cleared for 10 years. I suffer, but I suffer. When it rains, you know I'm going to suffer. But what can we do? It's not, they don't have the money now. When they get the money, things will be okay. But the only thing I'm hoping that they do not do is borrow no money from the Chinese and cannot pay it. Pay it back, because the Chinese are going to take something very valuable, your oil field, your airport or your seaport or the police or the army. They are going to take something that is dear to you. So if you borrow, to the Prime Minister, if you borrow any money from the Chinese, be careful that make sure you can pay it back.
Okay, Vinny, thank you very much. This person says the alternative, and I believe that would be the alternative to the debt restructuring, is to devalue, because as it stands, those who had money have now become poor anyway. So let us all be poor together, says the writer. It's all those who have contributed nothing to society who call brass tacks, saying, we are all in this together. The person goes on to say, I am retired, still pay income tax, pay health insurance, and I have never gotten anything free from government. Invested so I won't have to live off the government. And I'm expected to live the same way as those who have contributed nothing. Tomorrow, I have to pay the QEH $263 to use a room for 30 minutes to get a preventative colon test done by a private doctor. And we are all in this together. This other person said that, I want this question answered. I had treasury bills which matured in August. These were unilaterally rolled over without my consent. The offer document speaks about debt outstanding as at September. And at that date, I did not have any intention to have any outstanding treasury bills, as this money was placed for temporary use, including medical bills, day-to-day living for a parent with heart condition. These bills are also purchased at a discount similar to the savings bonds and should be excluded from the debt restructuring. I don't have an issue with the long-term treatment of treasury notes and debentures. This other person says people acting as if this debt deal, if we do this debt deal, we won't have to devalue. The country is still not earning foreign exchange and borrowing money from the IMF. And it is simply kicking the can down the road. Now, if you look at it just like that, I think one of the critical points you need to take into consideration is that there's got to be this restructuring component. It's not the restructuring of the debt alone, but it is the way in which we do business. So that has a lot to do, for instance, with trying to reduce the amount of money that the government is spending, dealing with the state-owned enterprises, having some kind of program of divestment and that sort of thing, and having the resources available from a combination of the IMF and the multilateral agencies to help give us the breathing space that is required. But it is not going to be easy, not at all. And what you are hearing here today from people who invested in government paper is just an example of the kind of pressure and hardship that some people are likely to endure in this program. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yeah, morning.
Now, David, I really want to speak to you on two matters, but before I go, because I need some time to expand what I'm going to say. I don't think you were really fair to Raul just now, you know. Do you think you were?
How was I unfair to him?
Look, this situation that we find ourselves right now in this country, and as Raul told you, he didn't even know the situation was so dire. It's only after the election he realized how bad things were in this country. And I think that was a fair assessment coming from him.
So how was I unfair to him?
Because you asked him what caused him to change and that sort of thing.
So what's unfair about that?
That doesn't sound too good because I think he used his common sense. Do you hear my say to you?
Well, look, let me tell you something. I don't have anything to apologize for in questioning Raw. That was a reasonable question to put to somebody who's a regular caller who's taken a particular slant over the years and has changed his tune. I don't understand why you need to get a reprimand from you for that.
I would, because that is that showed the maturity of the man. He realized that.
Well, that you can come to that conclusion. If I didn't ask him the question, you wouldn't be in a position to see how mature he was.
But he told you what he realized.
And that's what you're supposed to do.
Right, but don't
my try. Position is to ask the question.
But don't try to treat him like that.
I did not treat him badly at all. And you are just blowing this out of proportion.
I think you treat him badly.
Well, that's your judgment. It is not mine.
So he handled you, I think, in the best way he could anyway.
Fair enough.
Now, listen. I sympathize with these people who at the present moment is complaining about the bonds and the government papers that they're investing. There are no two ways about it. And if I were in that position, I, like them, would not feel too comfortable either. But you know, long and short, the story. These people would now come to realization at the mismanagement that the people in Barbados witnessed, and we had to endure under the Democrat Labour Party for the last 10 years. And I don't think these people should ever, the ones who are suffering now, because I know every one of us, including myself, going to feel a tremendous amount of pain because of the mismanagement of the last administration. And these people who are going through this should never, ever want to hear or see a Democrat Labour Party in this country again. Because of this, and the way they're handling the economy in this country, is what we've got to be going through happening in Barbados now. When the Mayor Motley administration come to office, therefore, in a broken country, this country were broke. And this is why they had to take these measures. And the ones who calling for a Democrat Labour Party, I would like them to come not and tell me, but tell the country what indeed would have been the alternative if not this present structure or process that we are going through right now. I want to hear what would be the alternative as far as they are concerned. So I would expect them to come and try to derail the Mayor Motley administration like they're coming at the present moment. As I said, I sympathize with the ones who are going through the problems with their bonds and so on. And I repeat myself, if it were me, I would feel the same way. So much for that. Last week, I listened to Extract on this station. And there was an extract coming from a meeting that was held in St. Andrew by the St. Andrew branch of the Democrat Labour Party, and it was being addressed by Irene Garner, and I was told that there was about 8 or 9 people in attendance at that meeting. The numbers didn't really matter. What really mattered to me is the statements that was coming out of that meeting, because when I hear some of the things that was being said, it sent me into fits of laughter, David. One of the things she said to the 8 or 9 people in attendance is that there, the Democrat Labour Party are putting together a team of people who will be coming to tell the people of this country about the IMF. And the way that she was coming across to me as though they're coming with another set of political propaganda and their scare tactics to send a sort of fright in the people of this country as far as the IMF is concerned, simply because the Barbados Labour Party government has not gone in a program with the IMF. I think that's wrong after they're coming out to address this problem.
Well, but you are speculating as to exactly what strategy they're going to be using. I think in these circumstances, would it not be better to wait and see exactly what approach they're going to be adopting rather than guessing that this is what they're going to do?
But that may be true. I would agree on that part. But I mean, well, here she's standing up and get this team of people. Now, when she was coming to talk to the purely IMF, because she said something after that statement that made me believe that that's exactly what they're going to do, because she started to give me a bad impression about the IMF. But I don't remember the exact term she used. That is why I say that to you.
All right.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, I don't think that that is something that we need to fight up about right now. The country has taken some tough decisions already. We can expect some more. It is a climate where there will be cut and thrusts of debate about whether the policies that are embarked upon are the right policies. You will find that there are others, not just people from the opposition Democratic Labour Party, but other opposition parties too, and even people in the middle of the road who would feel as though we perhaps could do something else here and there to ease the burden. But that is the nature of where we are right now. Now, for 10 years or so, when the Democratic Labour Party was in office, we also scrutinized every set of tax increases that we had, from the first one in 2008 or thereabouts. And, you know, it is part and parcel of the kind of vibrant society and freedom of expression that should prevail in a country like this. You know, people have their mouths, they will talk, but at the end of the day, they're not the only, the critics are not the only people who have a voice.
But you know, I think at this present moment, they should be thinking about organizing themselves or putting people in place to respond to certain issues that affect this country.
Well, the IMF program would be one of those things that affects the country. But you want to deprive them of a voice in that?
But what you're hearing coming from, as I said to you, it sounds as though it would be something different to what I'm now saying to you. But what I would say to you, I mean, in closing, I hope the president of the Democratic Labour Party would be more mature than that, because if there's really a case, it would really shock her in maturity.
The Democratic Labour Party would certainly be resistant to taking advice from you. They don't consider that that would be sincere advice, because you've criticized them so much and you're such a devoted supporter of the Barbados Labour Party, that any such advice would ring hollow to many of them, down to brass tacks.